Let me begin with some background information. Shakespeare sonnets were published in 1609, well after they were written, and well after the Elizabethan vogue for sonnet sequences had passed. They were probably written, most of them, in the 1590s, however. There are 154 of them, and really the last two are separate because they are an older-fashioned kind of sonnet based on a little story in Ovid. So let's say there are 152 sonnets. And they are divided between the first group, the bulk of the sonnets, 126 sonnets, which are addressed to a handsome young man, an aristocrat, whose favor the poet is seeking. And then 26 more, these are numbers 127 to 152, to a dark lady, to and about a dark lady, with whom both the poet and the young man seem at one time or other to be having an affair. Speculation about the real identities of the persons involved, and there's some other figures who make appearances in the sequence, speculations about the identities of these persons have been rife for centuries. Let me assure you, we can say with safety that nobody knows anything for certain, and that moreover it doesn't matter, because the sonnets stand on their own as models of poetic prowess and as the record of a complex love affair, a complex erotic and emotional turbulence, whether fictive or actual. For my purposes, I would simply suggest that these sonnets do anything that a lyric poem can do. And for that reason, I want to talk about them with brevity. Here is Sonnet 12, a classic example of Shakespearean construction, a thoroughly conventional theme. When I do count the clock that tells the time, and see the brave day sunk in hideous night, when I behold the violet past prime and sable curls all silvered o'er with white, when lofty trees I see barren of leaves which erst from heat did canopy the herd, and summer's green all girded up in sheaves borne on the bier with white and bristly beard, then of thy beauty do I question make, that thou among the wastes of time must go, since sweets and beauties do themselves forsake and die as fast as they see others grow, and nothing gainst time's scythe can make defense save breed to brave him when he takes thee hence. It's a Shakespearean sonnet, quatrain, 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 couplet, when, then. But Shakespeare also honors the ideal of the Italian sonnet by having the first half, when, this, and then the second half, then, as a kind of response. The theme of the poem is thoroughly conventional. It's the theme of the first 18 sonnets in the sequence. He is urging the young man to marry and reproduce so that his beauty does not die with him. But he uses the couplet in an interesting way. I'll come to that in a moment. But most remarkable is Shakespeare's way of varying the motif of time's inexorable progress. Some lines refer to time as circular. Some refer to it as linear. Some are images that involve beauty. Some involve tragedy. Just take a look at the first quatrain again. When I do count the clock that tells the time. That's mechanical. And then he uses another image in the second line. And see the brave day sunk in hideous night. Well, that's something daily. A heroic, brave day sinking into an ugly night, but a day that will return. This, then, is succeeded by an element from the natural world, when I behold the violet past prime. Violets, however, will return again the following spring. And then, in line 4, a human representative, and sable curls all silvered o'er with white. It's a synecdoche. It's the part for the whole. It's an image of great beauty, both visual and sonic beauty, but it's an image also of great sadness, because the human being, unlike the cyclical clock, unlike the circular day, unlike the seasonal violet, will not return. And in the second quatrain, Shakespeare shows how the trees, the lofty trees, now barren of leaves, the trees have a beneficent function. They protect the herd, but they're prevented from doing that in their activity. They can't do it any longer.